Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the BT Powerhouse Podcast. This is number 27. It is June 24th. We are on NBA Draft Night Eve, so to speak, here. So we kind of wanted to get together, chat a little about the action that's coming tomorrow. Obviously, a big night in basketball for the Big Ten, and specifically for the Big Ten players who could be drafted and their families. Obviously, a great night for them, and really a sort of a coronation of, you know, years and years of hard work. But nonetheless, we want to talk about who could get drafted, how many players from the Big Ten, where they could fit in, can they make an impact early in the NBA, what kind of long-term impact they can make. And to help me out, we have two of our great writers here, Adam and Josh. Adam, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me tonight.
Yeah, it's great. Josh, how are things going?
Things are good. I'm excited for the draft.
Yeah, definitely. You know, after months and months of talk, it's nice to finally to have it here, just one day away, and actually, you know, less than 24 hours here, and we'll know who the number one pick is. But yeah, why don't we jump back straight into it here? Obviously, there are the big three, so to speak, from the Big Ten this year: Sam Decker for Wisconsin, D'Angelo Russell for Ohio State, and Frank Kaminsky for Wisconsin. They look like the only for sure Big Ten draft picks. And the only likely first rounders. First, do you agree with that assessment? And second, which of those guys? What kind of order do you see out of those? And Adam, we'll start with you on this one.
I agree. You know that those are the three shoo-in guys right there, and it's not a bad trio really if you look at it, because they're both projected in the lottery, or all three of them, I should say, are projected in the lottery. I think we've seen at one point or another, we've seen Frank Kaminsky, I think, come up a little bit. You know, I've seen mocks with him anywhere from number 8 to the Pistons at one point to number 13, I believe, with the Suns. And, you know, just a few weeks ago, he was in, you know, 20 or 21st pick. Sam Decker is another guy that I've seen shoot up a little bit, too. But D'Angelo Russell, the closer it gets to the draft and the more people talk about Big Ten prospects, I feel like D'Angelo Russell is the guy that everyone is looking at and viewing as the one with the most potential, at least out, you know, right out of the gate. So I think that D'Angelo will probably be the first guy from the Big Ten selected. I don't necessarily think that's really up for debate. That'll probably happen guaranteed.
Okay, you seem to be having a little bit of phone trouble for you, so maybe you're in a bad spot or something. But Josh, do you agree with that, and kind of how do you see them coming off the board?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Adam. I mean, I think, you know, between Russell, Kaminsky, and Decker, I think those are the only surefire, definitely first-round picks. I think once you start getting into the second round, at least the Big Ten guys, I think Aaron White is a potential, but he's kind of on – the lower end of the second round. He's probably the only other guy right now, at least, that I think is kind of in contention. I mean, I think D'Angelo Russell has to go first between those three. I mean, honestly, he could go anywhere from being slotted number one to, you know, four or five, depending on how everything shakes out. I think Kaminsky will go second. I really love his game. I mean, it was great for college. I don't quite know how it's going to translate for the NBA, but I think the really interesting player, the one that could kind of make the most surprising impact of anyone drafted, honestly, is Decker. I think his versatility, his length, and if he can improve his jump shot, just as a 6'9 small forward in a league that's getting smaller, but he can move like a guard, it'll be really interesting to see whether Decker goes to a team that he can come in and contribute to right away.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think at this point it's pretty clear that Russell is going to go off the board first, and I definitely think he should. He's the youngest of the three. He was really, you know, he's probably the second best player in the conference last year. behind Kaminsky, but considering he was just a freshman and he had a lot less around him than either Decker or Kaminsky, I think that says a lot about his skill set. And really, I mean, even when you just watched him, there was so much more there than even he was showing last year, and he was already fantastic. After him, I do think Kaminsky, I agree, I think Kaminsky will probably come off the board second. But I do kind of like Decker more long-term. You know, Kaminsky has the great skill set, the really diverse post-game, but Decker to me fits better in the NBA. And I'm kind of concerned about where Kaminsky fits in terms of, you know, he size-wise he's a five, and on defense he's a five, but you know, his offensive skill set, I'm kind of concerned how it's going to sit there. And really, you know, down low, how is he going to defend? But nonetheless, yeah, those three seem to go high, or seem like the guys who are going to go high. And kind of spinning off this, I believe Josh talked about Aaron White a little bit here, but who is a guy you could see sneaking in relatively high in that second round? And who would it be? Maybe if there's a couple guys, who would they be? And can they stick to an NBA roster? Because as we always talk about, the second round is not guaranteed. So, Adam, who do you see that could potentially fit into that role?
And hopefully my connection's better here. One guy that I would really like to see, and I guess maybe this is a little bit biased on my point, on my behalf, but I would really like to see Travis tries to get a shot. I think that he has proven, you know, through 4 years under Tom Izzo, I think anybody who makes it out and still sane after those 4 years deserves some kind of, I don't know. But Travis definitely has the dedication factor. He's got the effort factor, the coachability, all that stuff. Son of a coach. I can't imagine a guy, you know, if he worked a shot in the NBA, I can't imagine, you know, the team or the coach or the management or whatever being sorry, because you're going to get a player, I think, that's going to give you effort all the time. And I think that he knows that he's a little bit of an underdog role too, but he would be a very late second round. I don't know if I see any other guys from the Big Ten going in the early second round. I think, as mentioned, Aaron White, possibly a late second round pick, and I think we've all probably at some point talked about Teran Petaway from Nebraska. So that's where I'm looking. The guys outside the first round, Travis Trice, I guess, is the guy that I'm focused on. I've seen him in mock drafts going to the Cleveland Cavaliers, actually, you know, and he's from Ohio, so that'd be a hometown thing for him. But that's kind of where I sit on that. I just can't get over when I love seeing guys like in Aaron Kraft. You know, Aaron Kraft wasn't really somebody who had the NBA skills, but he had the effort, the hustle department. I think Travis Trice is probably a little bit better scorer, and I think that Travis, you know, he can improve better overall, and I think that he will get a shot at some point, whether through a camp or whatever. But that's a guy who I'd like to see get a shot.
Josh, how do you see it shaking out?
So yeah, definitely agree with Adam. I think Travis Trice is definitely a great player. Kind of to go along with all of those intangibles, one guy I would love to see potentially get a shot on an NBA roster is Gabriel Olushanye. I wrote about him earlier this year. He was one of my favorite players in the Big Ten. One of those like old school kind of below the basket guys, kind of brought his hard hat to work every game. And just someone that I think, you know, obviously not going to be an NBA star, but a guy that at 6'10", a little bit like what Festus Ezeli kind of did for the Warriors this year, just a guy that really knows his role, is a great defender, a great rebounder. You know, someone that a contending team could say, maybe we need one more big man. And I think Olushanye could really provide both size and rebounding to a team that could potentially be in contention for a championship. So those are probably the main two. I mean, you could potentially see Brandon Dawson maybe getting a late look, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be tough to see too many Big Ten guys sneak in at the end. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of them just they don't have that NBA size. They don't have that elite athleticism to really get in the in contention there. But a couple of the guys that I've kind of had my eye on, you know, first off, Petaway from Nebraska. He's really been getting a lot of attention. I know he's worked out with Detroit twice, which anytime you see a guy work out with the same team twice, that's kind of a red flag that pops up. I am kind of interested to see how he could fit into kind of a limited role, because at Nebraska, it was a lot of times it was, you know, throw the ball to Petaway, he'll make something work, he'll chuck it up, and that's not going to work in the NBA because he's not going to be the best player on the floor. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if, and especially in the summer league, you know, can he be that number three offensively and not be that go-to guy and kind of force up shots. But he's the big one to me that pops out. I know Adam was talking about Trice, and I definitely agree. I think his offensive skill set definitely has to make him an option. The size is an issue, obviously, but I could see him sneaking onto a roster, you know, late, a team that needs a point guard and, you know, a guy who can boost offense off the bench. I could see him sneaking in there, but outside of those two, again, you know, Aaron White, he has the athleticism, he has the body. It's just, where does he fit in exactly in an NBA lineup? But I'd say that's kind of the general thoughts there on some of the later ones. In terms of, what should I say, outside of those, who do you see a guy that could potentially, you know, this summer, the big thing will be the summer league, and I guess just to get a little more discussion about some of the other guys, so to speak, who's a guy you could see shaking it up in the summer league who could work his way onto a roster if he does go undrafted? And Adam, we'll start with you on this one.
I'll go back to Brandon Dawson, if that's okay, because I kind of looked him over, and yeah, both of you guys, Josh, make a good point. The Dawson thing is he's a tweener, right? I mean, he was playing a lot of four for Izzo, but he doesn't handle four sides for the NBA. But he proved this past season that he's an elite rebounder, he's an elite athlete around the rim, never developed a jump shot, which, you know, we were waiting for. You know, it seemed like every summer that was the thing, like Brandon Dawson's worked on his jump shot and he's going to showcase it this year, and it didn't happen. And then that cycle repeats again and again. My only question with Brandon is just his tendency to disappear a lot of times, because we've seen when we've seen him at his peak, when Brandon Dawson is at like the high end, he is easily one of the best athletes on the floor, if not the best athlete on the floor. And I think he proved that, especially last year during the tournament, a 24-point game, a 26-point game. He played well during stretches during the Final Four run this year. Didn't play incredibly well against Duke, from what I remember, but Dawson is one of those guys that you expected. I wasn't ever surprised, really, when he put up a game with 20 points or 14 rebounds, because I knew that he had it in him. I was more surprised when he had those games where it was 4 points and 2 rebounds. And he really picked up his blocking last year, too. If he can elevate himself, you know, and this is easy to say, if he can be consistent in a summer league and just prove that he doesn't have that on-off switch, I think that gives him a real, like a tremendous upside, really, because who doesn't want somebody like Dawson who can rebound? And you get to take away the fact that he's only 6'6", or maybe 6'5", really. And take that away and just look at how he's got a vertical. He's proven that he can rebound with anybody, and he's strong enough, too. Like I said, my only question with him, really, is just motor and consistency. But when he's topping out, there aren't many guys that I like better on the glass and around the rim than Brandon.
Josh, who do you see as a guy who could emerge this summer?
Quickly to touch on Adam's point, I think that the Brandon Dawson is a really interesting player, because you saw someone like Draymond Green, who's maybe 6'7", generously listed at 6'8", who was playing center in the NBA Finals and making a massive impact, having a triple-double in the final game. So if someone like Dawson can maybe stick as a 3 or a 4, just at, like Adam said, just with high intensity, a lot of effort, a lot of energy, then I think he could probably stick on a roster. I think that there's enough of an upside with Dawson where if he can improve his jump shot, teams should take a chance on him. My guy that I think really deserves a shot would be DJ Newbill at Penn State. I think Newbill obviously didn't get the type of publicity and national TV games that guys playing at Ohio State and Michigan and Wisconsin get. But Newbill's just a phenomenal scorer, really didn't play with a great team. And I think more than anything, he just has a chip on his shoulder. So I think Newbill doesn't expect to get drafted. I don't think he will get drafted, but I could see Newbill being the guy in summer league that just kind of is putting in extra shots and really kind of wowing scouts and GMs by staying all 4 years and really working on his game and trying to turn Penn State into more of a basketball program. So I think watching Newbill over the next month or so will be really interesting.
You took my guy. I definitely think Newbill's a guy who could tear it up. I don't think he has the measurables, and I don't think he has that, you know, pedigree to really get into the draft. I know some people are holding out hope, but, man, if you watch the guy play, I mean, he was just an assassin. You know, he could score outside, he could score inside, he could pass. He wasn't that bad of a defender. He had it all. It's just he doesn't have those raw measurements to get drafted, unfortunately for him. But I definitely think he's a guy who you could see just light it up in the summer league and somebody, you know, bring him in and sneak onto a roster for next season. But to talk about somebody else, because you already jumped on Newbill here. one of the interesting guys for me is Shannon Scott. I know before the season started, a lot of people were talking about him as a second round, maybe even above that. He kind of slid when his kind of insane assist numbers dropped off during Big Ten play. But he's a great defender. I know he's undersized. Again, that's the issue with a lot of these guards at this that we're talking about here for the summer. But you know, he can defend, he can pass. He obviously will have to develop more of a shot. But I could see him as a guy. You know, if he can run an offense efficiently enough this summer, that you know they would feel fine. You know, bringing him on as the third point guard. And just, you know they can get a couple minutes out of him and the offense won't collapse. But he's another guy that I would say out there who could, you know, potentially sneak in there. But yeah, kind of moving back off of some of the Big Ten guys here towards the draft as a whole. You know, obviously there's a lot of debate at the top about who's going to go number one, number two, number three, and so on. Who do you see as the top prospect in the draft this year? And sort of why do you see that, and where do you see them factoring in long term? Adam, we'll start with you on this one.
I've always liked Jahlil Okafor, and for a lot of reasons. And I guess maybe they're not always the best reasons. It seems like every time I've watched Jahlil Okafor play, he plays like the player that I think that he can be. And I think he demonstrated. I'll go back to the game, you know, the Final Four against Michigan State. You know, he was pretty hard to handle for the Spartans, and that was the case. He'd even been slowed down a little bit in the three games prior to that. But I think that one of the questions about him too, people were like, well, does he have an on-off switch? And if he did, he'd certainly turn it on when it mattered most. A lot of Kyle Towns, I know, is a lot of people are talking about when you have big men like that that exhibit all those mm-hmm. skills. You know, we've mentioned like the raw skills and the measurables, and those guys have it, and they're definitely strong and great options for the top pick. I think I'm looking at Draft Express right now, and that's kind of like one of my favorite mock draft sites. It has Kyle Towns going number one overall. I guess I couldn't argue with that, but if I had to choose between Towns and Okafor, I would take Okafor. I think in this draft particularly, if you look at the best player available, the position, and especially like a cornerstone position, a big man, you know, those are always at a premium. Jahlil Okafor, to me, seems like the logical no-brainer number one pick.
Wow, no-brainer. Bold. Josh, who do you see as the top guy?
Despite your calling it a no-brainer, I'm going to have to disagree and say that I think Towns is my number one. I mean, the biggest thing for me is the NBA is shifting to faster, smaller ball, more agile. And Jahlil Okafor projects as a true center, and I think he'll be a very good player. But I like the versatility that that Towns has. I love the way he runs the floor. Sure, his postgame isn't as refined as Okafor's, but Okafor, I felt like, got completely exposed in numerous games on defense against teams that he had should have no business giving up 15, 20 points to the opposing interior player. I just think that Towns really didn't get to showcase everything, whereas at the end of the season, Duke had 7 scholarship players, and Towns maybe only played 21 or 22 minutes a game, so he didn't get the chance to play. Arguably, he got to play maybe a third or half of what he was going to play in the NBA. So I think once you let him showcase a lot of what he can do, and the fact that he can shoot, that he can pass, that he's a really good rim protector, I like him on the whole better than Okafor.
Interesting. Yeah, I was really high on Okafor coming out of high school. Actually, you know, a couple years before that. To me, he was Solinger 2.0, which I know he's gotten a lot of comparisons to now. And I was just, you know, mega high on him. And he totally lived up to the hype for me in college. But I never was quite sure on him as a pro prospect just because he really relies on bullying guys with his size. You know, which works great in college, great in high school, but I'm kind of worried about him doing that against, you know, 7-foot big NBA centers. And that was my first red flag with Okafor. And the other thing is I don't think I realized how good Towns was. And, you know, I hate to put too much stock into workouts and so on, but, you know, they always talk about how, you know, with Kentucky and they, you know, they play to win. They don't necessarily, you know, showcase all their talents and so on. But I didn't realize, you know, one of his best skills coming out of high school was shooting from long range. And, like, during the workout, he was hitting, like, 70 of 100 three-point shots or something, which I know, you know, a workout's a lot different than during a game. But, you know, if Towns has a three-point shot as well, like, wow, he's truly, like, a crazy prospect. So I think it was the fact that, you know, some of these skills that he didn't really get to show as much at Kentucky and the fact that I just was a little concerned about Okafor that really makes me, you know, view Towns as the top guy. But behind him, I definitely think Okafor is the second guy. I think that's who I would draft. I know a lot of people have talked about Russell, but, you know, Okafor to me, his offensive game is just phenomenal. And, you know, even if he's a bad defender, you still got that to rely on. But moving out of that, jumping back over to the Big Ten, so to speak, you know, the big question will be, you know, how many guys does the Big Ten end up getting drafted? You know, the last couple of years, the Big Ten has done very well getting multiple lottery picks, a bunch of guys in the first round. You know, it really doesn't look like they're going to get the same success this year, but ultimately, how many guys do you see getting drafted? And Adam, we'll start with you on this one.
I'm going to say 3 guys. I'm going to take the easy, safe pick. I mean, 4 at the very least, and I'm going to hang on to the belief that somebody at the very end. And I'd have to look at the draft order, but I want to believe that somebody with like a 58th and on pick that wants a good point guard to just stick in the rotation, somebody who's defensive-minded, hustle, would take a flyer on Travis Trice. But I'll go the safe route, and I'll say that it's Decker, Kaminsky, and Russell being drafted for sure, which is, like we said, that's definitely happening. But I'd go one further, and I would say that Kaminsky gets drafted before Decker. I'll say that Decker is the last one to go. It'll go Russell, Kaminsky, Decker.
Okay. Josh, how many people do you see getting drafted from the Big Ten?
Yeah, I agree, by the way, with the order. I think you have Russell, Kaminsky, and Decker. I think some team maybe in the 10 or 11 range is going to pull the trigger on Kaminsky. I've heard rumors that the Knicks are potentially in trade talks with the Suns and might trade their number 4 pick for the 13 pick in Eric Bledsoe. And I know that the Knicks have been very high on Kaminsky, so that could potentially be a landing spot. Mm-hmm. If not, the Suns could pick him at 13 too. And then, yeah, I think Decker will follow him. And then I think you'll see one other Big Ten player be drafted. I don't know who it's going to be, but I think that there are too many Big Ten players, and the Big Ten, maybe it wasn't the top conference in college basketball, but, you know, you could argue it was the second or third best this season. So I think someone from the conference will likely be drafted. My hunch is it's Aaron White, that just his shooting and size, someone will take a chance on him, but, you know, it could be Dawson, it could be Petaway, it could be any one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm going to take the easy thing here and just kind of fall in line here. I think the, you know, Russell, Kaminsky, Decker are all pretty, they're locks. You know, they're going to go in the first round. It's just about, you know, how high they go. I do think Russell and Kaminsky end up in the lottery. I think Decker, you know, misses the lottery, but is pretty close. And, you know, I have to think one of those other guys get in. You know, you have White in there. You have Des Wells from Maryland. You have Shan Scott, Trice, Dawson, you know, Petaway. I would think, you know, at least one of those guys gets, you know, grabbed up late. You know, last year it was Marble from Iowa. Orlando ended up taking a shot on him. I think they take a shot on one more. I'm not very confident that more than one comes off. I think it's White or Petaway most likely, but you know, that's what I see. I do think more will make NBA rosters by next year. You know, we were talking about some of the guys who might do well this summer, but that's kind of how I see that shaking out. I think it'll be a good year for the Big Ten, considering that three guys go in the first round and you put three real, you know, solid, hopefully solid rookies in the league. But overall, I do think it'll be a drop back from the great 2013 and 2014 drafts. But I guess jumping ahead, so to speak, you know, last year the Big Ten had a couple guys do well, some guys underwhelmed. Who do you think is going to be the best rookie out of the Big Ten this year in the NBA? And Adam, we'll start with you.
I think if you look at the potential to do something right now, there would be D'Angelo Russell, and most of the mocks that I've seen going number 3 to the Sixers. So just he's like 6'5", 6'6", 200 pounds. He can do a lot of things. Here's my thing, and I've been waiting to say this, and I wanted to, Thomas, I think you were actually at that game. It's not that I don't think that D'Angelo Russell is really good, because I'm going to go ahead and say that I think that he has the most potential to, you know, make an impact immediately. But I don't know if the ceiling is as high as a lot of people like to say. And I know he does have some time to develop. I think my concern with him is sometimes he's a little bit careless with the ball. And I don't believe, especially during that Michigan game, he actually looked, you know, regular with Muhammad Abdul-Rahman and Aubrey Dawkins, you know. So, and it's unfair to base it on the one game, I know, but I guess in the back of my mind, there's just a little bit of a concern with D'Angelo for me. But overall speaking, you look at, he's an exciting offensive player, there's no doubt there. And then a team like the Philadelphia 76ers, it's kind of just like the prime elixir to have a guy come in there and score a bunch of points and throw a bunch of young, talented guys on the floor and see what they can do. Because I think, you know, the Sixers have been waiting for the future for, I don't know, since a long time, pre-AI and post-AI. So it's I don't know. I think if you look at – if he is drafted by the Sixers, that's a pretty good – I think we could see him scoring anywhere 15, 18 points a game. Depends on his role in the offense.
All right. Josh, who do you see as the best rookie?
Well, I think there's two different ways to answer that question. I think there's a difference between the best rookie and the most successful rookie. I think Russell will be the best rookie. I think that's true. But I think the problem is if he gets drafted to a team like Minnesota or Philadelphia, I think he's just going to become disinterested. There were too many times during the season where he pretty much knew that Ohio State was getting outplayed, and he kind of, you know, he took a lot of shots and got his number, but I don't really know whether he looked super interested in what was going on. He kind of seemed disengaged and almost like he played a bunch of games like he had one foot in the NBA already. Maybe that's just his speed, but that was probably the biggest takeaway and the biggest knock on Russell is his lack of total engagement. As for the most successful, I think if Frank Kaminsky gets drafted by the right team, I think he could be a really nice 10 to 12 point, 5 rebound guy off the bench. Someone that comes in for a team, maybe like Indiana, that obviously has Paul George hurt and has a really nice supporting cast, but could kind of be a nice changeup for Dwight Hibbert off the bench. And so I think in that regard, just that Kaminsky shooting is really a nice weapon. And I think that because Russell's getting drafted to a team that is so much worse than the teams that Kaminsky and Decker will be drafted to, I think he'll have better staff, but not as successful of a rookie year.
Yeah, that's a good point. For me, I'm just to jump onto the Russell point here a little bit. I will say, you know, flat out, I'm very high on Russell. I think his raw ability is just through the roof. I think he just has a really diverse skill set, whether it's shooting, handling the ball, passing. You know, not the best defender, but you know, an area. I mean, he's just a freshman, but the one thing I will say, you know, you talked a little bit about him potentially, you know, not playing that well in games that didn't matter as much, or him putting up a bunch of stats but not making that much of an impact. That was one of the big struggles. I think a lot of people forget because he was so good in Big Ten play. But, you know, early in the season, he had a lot of games where he got stats, but it was against bad teams, and in really any of the significant games early in the year, he really didn't do much at all. So I think you know, that is something that could have some legitimacy to it. I think a lot of that, you know, was dissuaded by the Big Ten play and really two pretty solid games in the NCAA tournament. But I did just want to throw that out there for Russell. But again, I'm pretty high on him. For year one, kind of using Josh's evaluation here, I do agree. I think the stats-wise, it's going to be Russell. You know, he's probably going to be the 76ers' only real NBA player over at Tank Fest over there. But I think, I mean, I could see Decker being the top, the better guy and a, you know, a comparable guy long-term. Like I said, I'm higher on Decker than Kaminsky. I'm kind of concerned about how Kaminsky fits in, but I think you have a few shots there to not only to be in serious contention for the all NBA rookie team this year, but really to be all stars long term. You know,
Thomas, just one quick question.
Oh, go ahead.
So I'm looking at the stats quickly. In the game against Arizona in D'Angelo Russell's final collegiate game, he shot 3 for 19 and 1 for 7 on threes. I mean, my fear is, you know, if he goes into the league on a team like Philadelphia and he has the freedom to take a bunch of shots, that he'll end up putting up numbers similar to this. Do you think this is the legitimate concern, or do you think that, you know, it's one game in a really small sample size and you probably won't see it in the NBA?
I mean, I think there's two ways to spin off that. I just pulled this up, by the way, just so I know what I'm talking about here. I think the first thing you also have to throw out is that he did have 6 assists and 7 rebounds. And the second thing is Arizona had an amazing defense last year. So I think, 9 points against Arizona is like a lot more points against a regular team. But, you know, that's a side note. But I do think, you know, I feel like he'll be able to get enough stats. Just, you know, he did have his inconsistent times. I definitely will agree. But, you know, when he was on, I mean, he was just unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. You know, nobody knows for sure. To me, I think he's an impact player, and I think he can create enough by himself. But yeah, obviously, you know, he did have games like that where he didn't have the greatest stats. But yeah, I think overall it'll be interesting to see who shakes out. I know we're kind of split on Russell, it seems like, but yeah, jumping kind of back, that's sort of your NBA intro here. But one noteworthy thing that broke today that I did kind of want to jump on before we hang up here. I don't know if you guys had saw it, but Northwestern released their non-conference schedule today. Again, not NBA draft related at all, but and it could be the worst non-conference schedule I've ever seen in my life. I got to look this up, but they don't right now. They do have a tournament, a non-conference tournament, where they could play UNC, Kansas State, and Missouri. But right now, they are not guaranteed any games against teams that finished in the top 100 at KenPom last year. They have 5 games against 300-plus teams and 10 games against 200-plus teams, meaning they have 10 games that are against really terrible teams on, what, a 15, 16-game non-conference slate. But just kind of wanted to get your reactions to that, whether you think that's a good strategy for a team kind of that looks like they might be up-and-coming this year or next year. And what changes you would have made if you would have made them. And Adam, we'll have you start on this one.
I'll just go broad because I haven't seen the schedule, but I would think if you're an up-and-coming team, and real quick, by the way, Josh, a great way to look at, you know, the best player or who would make an impact, that makes a lot of sense that way too. As far as, you know, if I think I'm an up-and-coming team, if I think that I have enough players, My train of thought would be, why not challenge them a little bit early in the season? And I'm not saying go Tom Izzo and play somebody on an aircraft carrier and then go to Germany and you know, and play UConn or, you know, whoever the defending national champion is at the time. You don't have to do that, but, I mean, you know, we've all heard the jokes, you know, the Southeast Missouri Community College team, you know, whatever. Those teams, I don't know if they're – what kind of benefit are you getting? And for the other guys, they get to say, yeah, we played a Big Ten team. If you're Northwestern, I mean, I don't really, especially in basketball, I think if you have the opportunity, you can schedule outside of your league. If you think that maybe you're going to have a postseason, why not try to put some guys in your way that'll get you pumped up? And we all know how physical the Big Ten is, so why not try to maybe, if you can, to help out without beating up your team too much. Give them some opponents that are like conference opponents. You know, I mean, I think with a non-conference schedule, you have the liberty to get creative a little bit. And I think, I'll use Tom Izzo as kind of the reference, and he's like the guy when it comes to challenging in the non-conference schedule. So, like I said, you don't have to go full out and play North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, but I like the idea of at least challenging. And if you're playing, what do you say, 10 of the 15 or 16 games are against just cellar dwellers, I don't really see a lot of benefit in that. You know, it's instilling a little bit of false confidence, really. And especially, like I said, if you're an up-and-coming team, why not challenge yourself a little bit and see if you're really as good as you think you are?
Yeah, just to put it a little bit, I believe they have 13 games and at least like 10 of them are against just terrible teams. But yeah, Josh, we'll have you jump in on this.
Sure. Well, I think it's kind of, especially for a school like Northwestern that's in the Big Ten but doesn't really necessarily get as much national TV exposure, I think maybe going to one of those schools or playing one of those games on an aircraft carrier is kind of a nice thing for exposure. You know, Michigan State, you know, their regular season wasn't the best, but the fact that they've been playing on national TV a lot probably helped them in terms of seeding, to be honest, because the committee got to at least watch them a little more and got to see them progress from the beginning of the season till the end. So I think that I think it's just good to play games in that regard against bigger teams. And then, yeah, like Adam said, I think that you don't really want to play too many bottom-dweller teams because, you know, look at Michigan, for example. Michigan lost last year to NJIT and I'm totally spacing, and Eastern Michigan. And you can't – because those games – on your schedule and on your resume can only be detrimental. No one is going to look at your resume and say, oh, my God, Eastern Michigan, what a phenomenal win. Put them in a tournament. It's one of those games that can only hurt you. You need a couple for tune-up purposes, of course, but you don't really want to play too many of those bad teams because they can only hurt you. The third thing I would say is because Northwestern is on the smaller end of the Big Ten, I think it would be really interesting if Northwestern did a home-and-home with some of the bigger mid-major teams, teams like Murray State, like Wichita State, like Davidson, like Old Dominion, Davidson especially. Davidson is a great academic school. Northwestern is a great academic school. And just kind of to get Northwestern to play teams, you know, that'll be comparable to middle of the pack, to very good Big Ten teams, but also to allow these smaller schools that are very good, that want to play you know, Power Six conference opponents, kind of it's a marriage between both. So you get teams like Murray State and Davidson that say, oh, we actually have played somebody, or even Belmont. And then Northwestern gets to say on their resume at the end of the year, if they win, look, we went out of conference and scheduled a really difficult non-conference mid-major opponent the best that we could, and we won. So in that regard, I think that it would be a really interesting thing if teams like that created a home-and-home.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, as is probably pretty obvious from my tone of voice here, I am not a fan at all of these kind of non-conference schedules. And just to explain it for a second, you know, their biggest, again, they have those two games that they don't know who they're going to play. You know, they could play North Carolina. We don't know for sure. But out of the games that are guaranteed right now, their most difficult games are at DePaul and at Virginia Tech, who were both bad teams last year. I actually think I saw that none of the guaranteed teams that they have that they face next year had a winning record last year, which should speak for itself about the schedule. But not only first are do you put you you know they essentially have no margin for error through all of these games now, because the second they lose one game, it's an upset. You know, they can't gain anything from almost any of these games unless they're blowing out teams, because if they lose, it's an upset and it hurts their RPI. If they win, it's essentially no boost because the teams were terrible. And the second thing is it puts so much pressure on those two non-conference tournament games, you know, if they do play in North Carolina, because that's the only good non-conference team they're going to face. You know, most likely, you know, assuming, you know, DePaul isn't suddenly, you know, a national contender or something. But, and the thing is then if you lose to North Carolina, now you've lost to the only decent team you played. And really, you're essentially digging yourself a hole unless you almost go undefeated during non-conference play. And I just think that's a really bad, you know, precedent to have. I'm a big fan of having challenging schedules, especially if you look like you're going to be a real contender. But the thing is like you need winnable games against solid teams. I think a lot of people underrate that. And to kind of spin off that a little bit and try not to go too far, but, you know, I've criticized Ohio State's schedule a lot for almost the complete opposite reason, in the sense, you know, some similarities, but they schedule tough games, but they schedule games that are almost impossible to win. And what I mean by that is, you know, they'll schedule Kentucky, or they'll schedule, you know, like this year they have Virginia at home and Kentucky, who both look like they could be top five teams. And the thing is they almost throw themselves against a wall because they're scheduling games that are nearly impossible to win, and then the rest of their games are terrible. And I think Northwestern, you know, again, Ohio State has better opponents than Northwestern, even in that lower segment, but I think they've set themselves up for failure by choosing this schedule. And again, I don't think Northwestern's going to win the Big Ten or anything, but you know, I think they could have done a lot better job. And they have no good home games. Like, what a way to reward your fans, you know, no interesting non-conference games at home. But that's a different discussion, I guess. but yeah, I think that pretty much wraps us up here for today. Hopefully we'll get another podcast in here, you know, once the draft concluded and we know, you know, where people landed. But Josh and Adam, thanks for joining us here tonight. And we encourage everyone to check out the site over the next day or two as the NBA draft wraps up. But thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Thomas.